Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, April 15th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. A lot to get into today. This was the week of Syria when we attacked Syria. There's some nasty reactions by Russia and Iran. Exactly what comes of that, we will see. North Korea, the president is getting ready to meet with them. Speaker Paul Ryan is out, or at least he'll be retiring. At the end of the term, there are more investigations going on. It's getting difficult to follow all these investigations. Mr. Comey has a new book. I don't think it's working out the way he planned it. I mean, I don't know that anybody has actually read the book, but Chris Wallace of Fox News was saying that he apparently has had a lot of access to the book, and he says there's nothing new. There's absolutely nothing new in this book or nothing that will change anything. Mr. Pompeo is now before the Senate Confirmation Committee for Secretary of State. I thought it was fascinating that a Democrat senator from New Jersey was interested about only one thing. You know, we have a war going on in Syria. We've got all these problems in the world. And the only thing he seemed to be concerned about was gay sex. I just find that maybe that's typical of the lack of seriousness of the Democrat Party. And just very quickly here, I wanted to let me say hello to Bill. How are you, Bill? Great to have you again
tonight. Just fine this evening, Sylvia.
We have lovely weather here, just a little windy, but other than that, lovely.
Well, we have mixed weather here. It's nice one day, it's not nice the next day. Al Gore doesn't know what to do. I mean, he's writing memos, and I don't know what the situation. We have a forecast for later this week of very nice weather, so I'm putting on my snowshoes.
Well, you know that. I think you mentioned it today. They were going to have a big rally in Minnesota, global warming rally, and Mother Nature decided to have a little joke on these people, and they have all kinds of snow in Minnesota. I think Mother Nature does that on purpose, Bill.
I think so. You know, Mother Nature is more powerful than all of us, and one of the things I've noticed is the Democratic Party this week held a rally against global warming. I don't know. Maybe they think global warming is getting too many votes or something, but they say get rid of the non-scientists in government. Given some of the articles I've read recently in respected scientific journals that have begun to question global warming, begun to question a lot of the statistics, I think the Democrats might be careful. I really think they should be careful.
I agree. At least they should never say we're going to have the biggest rally in April, because Mother Nature has a way of throwing them a curveball, as they like to say. I wanted to say very quickly, Bill, if I may, just quickly jump in and say something here about Mrs. Barbara Bush, who's not doing very well in Houston. She's 92. She's not doing well, so we wish her a quick recovery. It doesn't look good, but we hope that she recovers. One of my favorite people. A lady who is the last First Lady of the World War II generation, and also along with Abigail Adams, the only First Lady who was a First Lady and the mother of a president. So she has a little history of Mrs. Bush.
That record is, and she almost, in a way, she almost could have been the mother of a second president, but unfortunately,
yes,
Jeb didn't make it. But yes, quite an outstanding lady, and she was gave some of the best advice to a graduating class I've ever heard. She had been a Wellesley graduate, I believe, and she was asked to give the commencement address at Wellesley. There was big controversy over the fact that she was asked, because the little feminists at Wellesley complained that she didn't really make it on her own. That she became First Lady through her husband, which is a terrible thing, although this was before Hillary Clinton.
I thought that was the only way you could become a first lady was to be married to a president, Bill.
Yeah, but they didn't see it that way. But she gave an excellent speech, and she made the point to these young graduates that what really counts in life is not what happens in the White House, it's what happens in your house. And that's correct. And if more people would get that idea that it's what they do that will build the country, not always what the government will do, I think we'd be a much healthier society.
I think so. So we wish her the best. She's apparently not well, not up to date with all the details, but she's not doing well. She's 92, and we wish her the very best. They live here in Houston, about 250 miles west of Dallas. Another quick thing I wanted to mention on this day in history, Bill, April 15th, 1947, I know there's always a good reason to talk about the Brooklyn Dodgers with you, but this was the day that Jackie Robinson broke the color line, as they used to call it, and played first base with the Dodgers. It's amazing when you look at his career. He came in a little bit later because of the segregated baseball back then, but he still retired. I checked this today. He retired with a .311 batting average for his career. And he was the MVP three times with the Dodgers. So this man had a great career.
He had a great career.
Jackie Robinson, Bill.
He was held back not only by segregation, but by a service in the Second World War. And he was also held back by the fact that actually early on he really wanted to be a professional football player. A terrific football player also. But for whatever reason that did not work out. And he was called up. He went to the Montreal club of the farm club of the Brooklyn Dodgers, and was called up in 1947. And I vaguely remember it. I was a little boy, but I vaguely remember it. But I do clearly remember is as he became an important player, I went to Ebbets Field. I saw him play live on a number of occasions. He was a terrific base runner. That was really a strength that tends not to be emphasized in some of the stories about him. He was probably the fastest man in baseball, and that was one of the things he added to the Brooklyn Dodgers. He was also a Republican. I don't know if toward the end of his life he was a Republican. Died, sadly, at a very early age, in his 50s, had been gone into some businesses before his retirement. In those days, ball players, even star ball players, weren't paid that much. Many people don't realize it, that many retired and had to immediately take another job, sometimes menial jobs, just to survive. People who were famous one day were Carl Furillo of the Brooklyn Dodgers, the Redding Rifle, the great right fielder. When he left baseball, he took a job as a construction worker on the World Trade Center. And Some went into successful businesses and built businesses like Pee Wee Reese. Of course, Joe DiMaggio was he was a major name. He was a national name. And he was the spokesman for Mr. Coffee, as we remember, appeared on a number of television commercials. Jackie went to work for a company, I believe he did work for them, called Chock Full of Nuts, which has a series of luncheonettes around the New York area. I don't know if it's national. But he stayed active in politics. He very much emphasized the importance of blacks in baseball. You know, what's interesting to point out, Silvio, is how few black stars there are in baseball today. It's not a black game any longer. Whatever reason, I don't know why, but young African Americans don't seem to want to play baseball. They seem to want to go into other sports. And it's actually becoming very much a white and to a certain degree, Hispanic game.
Yes, that's exactly right. And in fact, there are inner city schools where they do not have enough players to have a baseball team.
That's right.
We had that problem here in Dallas, where a couple of the inner city schools that were primarily black, they just didn't have enough players to put together a baseball team. And it's a shame because, as I was talking to him, my son had a black friend in high school, and they used to do a lot of sports together. So I would talk to his dad many times while we were watching them play. And as his dad said, Jackie Robinson was one of the most important, civil rights leaders of he did it on the field, of course, but one of the most important leaders. And, you know, he was a civil rights leader 15 years before Martin Luther King. Well, maybe not 15,
oh, yes,
but at least 10 years before.
And he was a very symbolic leader. They wrote songs about him.
Yes. And he seemed like a very nice guy. I mean, I've seen interviews with his widow, Rachel.
Yes.
And he seemed like a really good man. I have a memory of Jackie Robinson in the 1972 World Series. It was the last time that he was seen in public. He died a few days after. He was very ill. He looked very weak. I don't know exactly what he was suffering from, but he was not well. Yeah, he was in very bad shape, but he did manage to say a couple of things. At that time, they were celebrating the 25th anniversary of his playing Major League Ball, and that was the last time that he was in public. He died a few years later, and I understand the funeral in New York. I don't know if you were there then, but the funeral in New York was something else. Lots of people showed up, Bill.
Oh, sure. Sure, they did. And he also had a tragedy. His son, I think Jackie Robinson Jr., I believe, died of a drug overdose or something like that. It was he lived a glorious life, but also a very difficult life.
Well, he did, and it's a shame I never got to see him play, of course, just for obvious reasons. But I have seen a lot of the video clips, like when he stole home that time, and Yogi Berra went berserk. You know, I think that was in the 56 series, from what I remember from the video. But he was just great. He was a very complete ball player, and I also read something, Bill, that he was the first Dodger to make $35,000, which tells you something about salaries as well, Bill.
Well, yes, and that was way behind, though, what the Yankees paid. I believe that in 1927, it was later than 1929, Babe Ruth was paid $75,000 by the Yankees. And it was pointed out to him by a reporter that he made more money than the President of the United States. And his answer, which became very famous, was, "I had a better year than he did."
That's right. Well, that's classic Babe Ruth. I mean, you cannot teach that. I mean, you're born with that, I guess, with the ability to answer a question like that. But, yeah, Jackie Robinson, 71 years. And all the players today, by the way, Bill, will wear number 42 in honor of Jackie Robinson. Every major league game today, where they will wear number 42. So great story. Well, this was a crazy week, Bill. I'm not sure where to begin. We got Syria. We have Mr. Comey's book. Why don't we begin with Mr. Comey's book, because that seems to be the story of the day. I have seen several interviews about the book. I have not read it. I don't know of anybody who's read it other than the people who are interviewing him. And Chris Wallace was saying there's nothing in this book, absolutely nothing of nothing new. There's not, if you're reading this book to find out something dramatic about President Trump, you're going to be disappointed. There's nothing in the book, Bill.
Yeah, that's true. And look, the book will sell very well. It'll be a big bestseller, in part because every library will have to have a copy just for history. And all the political class in Washington will want the book just so they say they could, you know, they quoted it at Washington parties. But I think the book will not succeed in doing what he wants it to do because, first of all, I just think the American people are very uneasy about an FBI director writing a tell-all, especially so soon after he leaves office. You know, Hoover wrote a book while he was in office, but it was a book about policy. It was a book about the FBI. It wasn't a gossip book. This is a gossip book. He gives his opinions of Trump, which, of course, are not very high. But he should have realized in writing that book that nobody takes seriously the complaints of a disgruntled office seeker. You know, he's a man who was fired. He was a disgruntled employee. And I think there is that feeling that it's an inappropriate book. It diminishes him in the people's minds. Also, he's being interviewed not only on news programs, but on late-night comedy shows. That's just not right. It does not impress people. I remember when Barack Obama appeared on The Tonight Show, I believe, while he was president, and I felt how wrong this is. This is the president of the United States. We don't want to see him being interviewed by a comedian. Although right. a lot of the people in the White House press corps are comedians, but not intentionally. There's a diminishing of quality. I know that historically that presidents have appeared with, and also senators and governors have appeared with movie stars, but not in this context. So I don't think the book will really have much of an impact. There may be other things that have an impact. I was very much surprised today to see the vice president, who was in Peru, making a statement independently of the president regarding Syria, although he went along with the administration line. That's quite rare. And I think you may be seeing a little bit of independence from Pence in the near future. He may expect the possibility, just the possibility, that he may be president fairly soon. And that would not shock me.
No, actually, I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that. And I think, and, you know, speaking of the book, I thought that President Trump's attacks on Comey made no sense. There are times when I ask myself, why is he doing this? The book is going to collapse on its own.
Yes.
He doesn't have to push Comey over. Comey's doing a pretty good job of that.
Well, that's it. Go ahead.
Yeah, but these attacks, I mean, like, you know, saying it was my pleasure to fire him. Look, I'm sure he feels that way.
Yes.
And I certainly understand why he feels that way. But the best thing to do, it seems to me, with all these investigations, Bill, the best thing, it seems to me, for the president to do is just to sit back. Because I think he's winning a lot of these investigations.
That's
my sense, Bill.
There's an old line in politics. If your opponent is committing suicide, don't get in the way. And he gets in the way. It reminds me of a line that was used about Harry Truman. I've always felt, by the way, that when the reporters make comparisons of Trump with other presidents, they always choose Reagan. Well, how is he like Reagan, or how is he not like Reagan? That's the wrong comparison. The right comparison is with Truman. He's very Truman-esque. And one of the things that was said about Truman is he did the biggest things in the biggest ways and the littlest things in the littlest ways. And that's a perfect description of Donald Trump. He, on the one hand, can be a big man. He thinks in large terms. But on the other hand, he can be so petty. And it diminishes him. And you're right. He just should shut up.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, this morning he was, or either this morning or yesterday morning, he was fighting back with Comey, and I'm sitting there saying, what are you doing? I mean, what's the point of this? I mean, the reason I said he's winning, Bill, is not because he's out of the woods. I mean, he may have some problems. But unless they find a evidence that the money that paid this lady, Stormy Daniels, came out of the campaign and Trump knew about it, unless they find evidence like that or some tape in the attorney's office, a recording in the attorney's office of Trump talking to Putin saying, hey, thanks for all your help in getting me elected. I mean, unless they find something like that, doesn't seem to me to have anything at all, Bill. So that's why I'm saying just sit back and let this thing fizzle out. That's my sense, Bill.
Well, except that apparently from what I read, some of the watchers of these investigations are concerned about the fact that the investigators are going after Trump's lawyer and the so-called personal side, the business side of Donald Trump. That was not part of their commission. That
right.
was not what they
right.
were hired for. And this is why the special counsel thing is so dangerous. You know,
right.
this is democracies do not have endless or should not have endless investigations of people where the investigator tries to justify his existence by finding something. I mean, it's, you know, there was, I recall an article written many years ago, and I don't recall by who. I think it may have been by Harvey Silverglade, civil rights lawyer, who talked about these special offices that get set up, drug courts, you know, Office of Drug Enforcement. And on college campuses, I think Columbia has an Office of Sexual Misconduct, which probably will be joined later by an Office of Dirty Thoughts. And he said the problem with offices like that and with these special investigators is they feel they have to find something to justify the expense. And that's when you get into very, very slippery prosecutions. And also, some of them use these things to build their own careers. You know, the famous line that's being quoted quite often nowadays, actually by Lavrente Beria, who was the head of the Soviet KGB, who said, "Show me the man and I will show you the crime." In other words, mm-hmm. we will invent one. And that's
right.
getting close. Alan Dershowitz has been warning about this. We're getting close to the idea of criminalizing politics. And that is not
right.
something that can work in a democracy.
And if these ratings of President Trump, the Rasmussen rating of 50%, 51, 49, if he's in that area, give or take one or two of 50%, the public is not going to tolerate that either. I think if the public feels that this is a witch hunt, and when you're at 50%, a lot of people like what you're doing, then Mr. Mueller has to be very careful, and the Democrats have to be very careful, because this thing could just blow up in their faces very quickly. Because, look, I'm sure there's a lot of Americans who feel like I do. We weren't crazy about President Trump in the primaries. I was not. And, well, he won the election. He was better than Hillary Clinton, I'll say that much.
Yes.
But there's a lot of things about his style that often, you know, as I say, just hit me the wrong way.
Well,
but come
yes.
on, he did win. Let him govern.
Look, it was also a point made about Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was not one of my favorites. But yet, mm-hmm. as a president, he was one of the most prepared and knowledgeable presidents we have had. And while I thought many of his appointments were obnoxious, Haldeman and Ehrlichman were really the closest thing to the mafia we've ever had in government. He was personally obnoxious, and yet professionally, I mean, he did open China to the Western world. Whether you agree or disagree, it's fine. That's a perfectly
mm-hmm.
fine discussion to have. But he thought in large terms. He was he made vile comments privately, yet publicly, when Israel was in trouble in 1973, he was the one who helped. And
mm-hmm.
I think that we, you know, style does count, though. It really does. One of the great things about Ronald Reagan was he had such a great style. And he endeared himself to the American people, and people had confidence in him as a result.
Right.
I think that you know, if Trump is driven from office, it'll be more because of his abrasiveness than anything else. And that
right.
that counts. It counts in politics. He's
absolutely.
Not popular in his
absolutely.
He's not popular in his own party.
No, I know he's not, and there's a lot of Republicans concerned. But again, he was elected. He's doing a lot of good things that I like. I mean, I wish he would stop tweeting, frankly. But I
yes.
understand why he tweets, you know, because he feels that he's got to get his message out and all of that. But there's a lot of things that he's doing very well, and we'll talk about them
yes.
a little bit in the next segment. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from one of our sponsors here at Blog Talk Radio. And we'll be right back with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, as we like to do on Sundays. Bill, if I could just take a quick break from the conversation and bring up this new article that came out of a presidential ranking. You know how they rank the presidents from time to time.
Yeah.
And I always enjoy these things. I think we all love history. I've never felt that it's fair or sensible to compare a president from the 19th century, particularly pre-Civil War, let's say, with a president today. I mean, Truman's job was a lot different than James Garfield or John Tyler or whatever. So I just think of different presidencies, different government, and so on. But, you know, they're interesting to do. And I thought it was fascinating that President Obama has made his debut in the rankings at number 12. And I'm sitting there saying, first of all, it's way too early to judge him. At number 12, so he ranks with Eisenhower and Truman? No, he doesn't. I mean, I'm sorry, he doesn't. And,
no,
and
it's
not because he's a Democrat or a liberal Democrat, because FDR is in that ranking, and Woodrow Wilson is in that ranking,
Yeah.
So it's not because he's a liberal Democrat, but it's just it's not about his presidency when they're ranking him at number 12, Bill.
No, it's about race. Sadly, it's identity politics. The first black president,
yes.
Which you know, commendable to be sure in that respect, but it's very bad because it gives people a very wrong impression. Presidents will change over the years in their rankings. They usually go higher as more and more is learned about their administrations. There was a time when many historians thought Eisenhower was a kind of a weak, nothing president. It turned out later that was not true at all. That it's now called the hidden hand presidency. That behind the scenes, he did many, many things that had a great effect on policy, on the country, on the way the government was run. He was a man of wisdom, which is not something anybody ever said about Barack Obama. Or maybe a few people have, but they, you know, not meaning it. Eisenhower was also an infinitely more intellectual president than he was given credit for. He was actually very astute in history, very well read in history, but people didn't perhaps know that at the time. Eisenhower once said, by the way, that he got to where he got by hiding his ego. Obama got to where he got by displaying his ego. And it turned
yes.
out to be considerably larger than his intellect. He was, to me, just on the basis of what I know so far, not a successful president, and I cannot see how historians can rank him at number 12. There is really nothing he did that worked very well. You can't point to, you know, they say that great men do one great thing. But what great thing did he do? Well, some people say Obamacare. Obamacare, he had nothing to do with it, first of all. Which
mm-hmm.
is called Obamacare, and also it's been a failure. It's a very, very ineptly done program. Clinton once complained. He said, "I would have ranked higher had I had a great crisis," and he's right. There's no question about
right,
that.
That's true.
You know, you don't give presidents don't get credit for maintaining the peace. You know, they get credit for winning a war. You know, where would Churchill have been before World War II? Eisenhower himself said, if it hadn't been for World War II, he would have retired from the Army as an unknown lieutenant colonel. It's those big things that people do. They may be domestic. I mean, certainly Roosevelt, before World War II, and after all, more than two of his terms, were before World War II, and he is credited for holding the country together, not necessarily for solving the Depression. He didn't. But he held the country together, and he did give the country hope, and he led it through the Depression quite well in many respects, just as a leader of men, a leader of citizens. And then, of course, nobody can deny that he played a central role in winning the Second World War. Truman, who left office with a 25% approval rating, is now regarded as one of our best presidents because he organized the government to fight the Cold War and instituted things along with others like NATO, the Marshall Plan, which was really the Truman Plan, but it was called the Marshall Plan because it was easier to get it through Congress. He made the decision, a painful decision, very painful, to resist communist aggression in Korea, but that set the tone for our resistance to communism during the entire Cold War. And I think he is to be given a great deal of credit. So it's hard to justify Obama ranking more than somewhere in the middle, but because of identity politics, he will be given extra credit, and
right.
history will decide.
Well, history will, and you know, I wrote to a friend, you know, he was not the worst president we ever had, by no means. I mean, I'm sure there were others who were worse than him. But I certainly would not rank him at number 12. I think that, to me, sounds like almost like a repeat of the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, we're going to give you the Nobel Peace Prize because you talk about peace. We're going to make you number 12 because, you know, you want everybody to have health care. But as I was in a debate recently here in Dallas. I was, you know, at Telemundo with a Democrat. And the Democrat was complaining about the number of people in Texas who don't have health care. And I looked at him and I said, wait a minute. I thought that's what Obamacare was supposed to do.
Yes.
You know, so if these people don't have health care, it's because they don't know about Obamacare, because Obamacare
yeah.
was not what it was marketed to be. So anyway, I don't want to dwell too much on it, but I think number 12, with all due respect to President Obama, is not where he should be. I'm not saying he should be at the very bottom either, but not at number 12 for sure. That's way, way too much. Bill, let's talk about Syria. Talk about presidential decisions. We had an attack on Friday night. I think it was probably at least what I expected. I mean, I wasn't expecting us to invade Syria, but it seemed like, you make your case and you go home. You know, nobody wants to get involved in Syria, Bill.
No, nobody really does, because it seems to be so hopeless. And there are people who really are beginning to annoy me on our side, who are carping about the attack on Syria. People like Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham and a few of the others, Ann Coulter, who I don't take seriously. But, this is not what he was elected for. He was elected to get us out and not to get us in. You know, Lincoln once said, "I don't move history, history moves me." And to a degree, mm-hmm. that's true. There are things that come up during an administration that require an administration to do what it's not there to do. I mean, you're forced into it. You're forced into it by the pace of history. There are other players in history. There's an old line in military science that all war plans are obsolete on first contact with the enemy, because the enemy has a brain too, and he will see what you're doing mm-hmm. and then improvise. Obviously, Trump wants to get out of Syria, but he is also a man who listens, and that's good. Sometimes he listens, and maybe other times he shouldn't listen. And it's quite obvious that he now sees Syria and what's happening in Syria as a threat where we have to involve ourselves to some degree. And I think he saw this as very much a red line issue, that we don't use chemical weapons, which has been a part of international rule since the First World War. And they did, and we threatened to do something about it. And then if you threaten it, you got to do it. Otherwise, you lose your credibility.
Right, right.
Also, I think he sees this as an extension of Russia and Iran, and those are two countries with designs on the United States who are a threat to the United States. And I think reducing their influence, making it plain that we will resist, is an important foreign policy move. It may not be one that's popular. It may not be one that we looked for, but it was one that we had to do. And I think he did the right thing. General Keane, who I respect immensely, said it did not go far enough. That's probably true, that we may be back. And then it may be a more difficult debate. In England, Prime Minister May, who is really a wonderful spokeswoman for the cause of the West, has been under fire for the attack. You didn't go to Parliament. You didn't get our approval. And she may have to face a vote in Parliament, but I think she is a brave ally and did exactly the right thing in supporting us. And France, by the way, which has a lot of experience in Syria, is urging us to remain in Syria and to be stalwart. I'm glad to see these two allies are on our side and, if anything, urging us to be more firm.
Well, and Bill, the criticism from the Democrats is always the same thing, that he should go to Congress. And there's some truth to that. I mean, I would like to see the war resolution going back to Iraq or going back to 9/11, that maybe that has to be updated. I'm not necessarily against that. But the idea that we have to work with other countries, well, we did. I mean, France and Great Britain were part of this. So, you know, we have, we put the band together, as they like to say, and the other countries participated. So, I mean, this was a multinational mission, if only three countries, but it was a multinational mission. But I think it was the right thing to do. I mean, I don't want to get involved in Syria. It's horrible what's happening in Syria, but as long as they don't use chemical weapons, I don't mind watching it from the outside, Bill.
I fully agree with you. It's a mess that we did not start, but there are times when messes we didn't start require our intervention, because it's in our interest, and we will have to see how Syria develops. I mean, nobody believed in early 1950 that we would be fighting a war on the Korean Peninsula. But when the Korean War began through the invasion, the Soviet-sponsored, Soviet-supplied, Soviet-directed invasion of South Korea, President Truman made a historic decision to resist, understanding that if he didn't, we would have the same situation we had before World War II, where countries believed they could get away with it. And it isn't very long before they get to us, as the Japanese did, and as the Germans did. So it was an unpopular decision. Truman made it more unpopular by calling it a police action rather than a war, which it clearly was. But he made the right decision. And now, you know, people still say, oh, the Iraq War was the biggest blunder in American history. I don't think so. We won't know for 25 years how the Iraq War really worked out. Presidents make the best decisions they can. A decision in favor of strength is always better than a decision in favor of weakness. And we'll just have to see what goes on down the road. The Middle East is a mess. It is a disgrace. Nothing much is done about it. On the college campuses, the only thing they're concerned about is condemning Israel, which is
right.
The one country they'd want to live in. These things have festered for years. Somebody did make a suggestion, I forget who, that maybe it's time now for the United States, Russia, and some of the others to sit down and try to forge... earpiece just popped out. Try to forge some kind of an agreement in Syria, as they have in the past in other areas. Maybe that will happen. I don't know.
Well, that would be nice. That would be nice if we had an agreement like that. We've got North Korea coming up, or at least talks with North Korea, face-to-face talks coming up. But I agree with you about the Iraq War, by the way. If I could just take a say something about that. I mean, first of all, when President Obama took over from President Bush on Iraq, Iraq was actually doing quite well. And
yes.
The country was quite stable. There was none of the craziness that we saw later. And in fact, it got to the point where even Vice President Biden was running around saying that Iraq was an Obama success story, which has to go down as one of the greatest humorous remarks of all time.
Yes.
But they were taking credit for all the great things in Iraq, and then they pulled the troops out. I mean, we've talked about this before. They took the troops out, and that's what basically destabilized the region and created, to some extent, what's happening in Syria and what's happening in Libya at the moment, as well as all those refugees in Europe. I mean, a lot of them were escaping ISIS. So, people want to blame Bush for everything. I support the Iraq War. It was really taking those troops out. As I always like to say, how different would it all look if there were 20,000 American troops in Iraq in 2011 and 2012? It would look a lot better, a lot more stable, Bill.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Look, sometimes you have to make commitments. We have been in Korea since 1950.
Mm-hmm.
That's 68 years. But it has been one of the best investments we've ever made. I mean, those forces in Korea stabilized the situation. Korea has been turned into a remarkable modern democracy, a trading partner with the United States. We have also helped build Japan. We've been in Japan now. I mean, there's no occupation of Japan, but we have American forces in Japan. We have had them there since 1945. I think it's about 73 years or so, about 73 years. And there again, it's an important investment. We've had troops in Europe since 1942. Normandy was 1944. Italy was a little earlier, so I think 43. So we've had troops in Europe for those numbers of years, but those are investments in our own future, investments in stabilizing the world so we don't have to fight a war. These are good investments, and I just find it very disheartening when people say, bring them home. Bring them home when it's ready and when the situation calls for it. But those investments have really paid off for us.
Well, people say bring them home. I mean, as you say, I mean, I think it's working out just great having the troops there in South Korea. I mean, maybe at some point South Korea can take care of itself. Maybe it can right now, or maybe not. I don't know. But I really think that much of the destabilization of the Middle East, at least Iraq, Libya, and Syria, much of that had to do with with pulling the troops out. I did want to ask you another question, Bill, or bring up another point. Many people are saying that when President Trump responded to Syria, that he was thinking about North Korea. What do you think about that?
Probably. Nothing wrong with that. You know, these are discussions that are held all the time. I remember some of the people who, years after World War II, criticized the American use of the atomic bomb. And they said, well, the real reason we dropped the atomic bomb was to influence Russia. Well, I have no doubt that was discussed. A lot of things are discussed. A lot of considerations go into a decision. And no, the real reason we used the atomic bomb was to end the war quickly. I have no doubt that that was the real purpose. But there were sub-purposes. There were sub-benefits. I mean, I hate to use the word benefit in reference to something so horrible as the atomic bomb. But other things are discussed. Other considerations are made. I have no doubt that people in his foreign policy circle, in the course of making this decision, said, well, this might be the effect on North Korea. This might be the effect on Iran. I have no problem with thinking of other things and how a decision will affect these other fronts.
No, and if this sends a message to North Korea that President Trump will enforce a red line, that'll just give President Trump a stronger hand when he sits down with North Korea. I mean, I always thought that one of President Obama's – I thought he made two big mistakes, President Obama, in foreign policy, pulling the troops out of Iraq in 2011 and then drawing that line and not enforcing it in 2012. But when you draw a line and not enforce it, you don't have a strong hand when you're talking to people about what you're going to do, Bill, because everybody says, well, you said that before and you didn't do it.
That's correct. And also, another thing is when you do things like that, that you don't have not only don't you have a strong hand, you influence other allies who see what you're doing or not doing and say, wait a minute, do we really want to trust these people?
Right.
You know,
I'm wondering if that's the reason that Great Britain and France were willing to play ball, because they knew, hey, this guy means it. You know, I don't know.
I think that's
maybe
true.
That's the. Yeah.
I think it's an excellent point that you make, that the allies in Europe who told us how much they loved Barack Obama, this is the America we love. And well, of course it was the America they loved. They used him as a punching bag. But they now see that America has a serious president. And a man who means what he says, and it is having its effect. It's having its effect in Asia. I mean, he got the head of North Korea to come to the negotiating table on our terms. And despite what the press wants to say about him, this man is emerging as the most consequential president since Reagan.
Well, certainly on foreign policy and economic policy as well, and he's made a great appointment to the Supreme Court, so I think you're right about that. I mean, he's being very consequential, a heck of a lot more consequential than I thought he was going to be when I didn't support him in the primaries. Bill, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with another segment with our friend Bill Katz, but I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, who's been playing around town.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlo's schedule on the show information. Click on that, and you'll be able to catch up with him. He's, as I say, playing in lots of places, and wherever he plays, the food is great, and the background music is absolutely, absolutely marvelous. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. A couple of more stories that I wanted to get into today, Bill. Staying with foreign policy for a second, Mr. Pompeo is up for Senate confirmation for Secretary of State. I think he's an excellent choice, and I hope they confirm him as soon as possible. I mean, I think we need a full-time Secretary of State as soon as possible. But I couldn't help but react to the senator from New Jersey. I can't think of his name right now.
Cory Booker.
Cory Booker, who sits there. I mean, here we are in the middle of Syria, in the middle of all these terrible problems around the world, and he is obsessed with gay sex. I mean, trying to somehow have Mr. Pompeo say that the gay sex is immoral or illegal or something. I'm saying, I mean, this is insanity, Bill. I mean, where do the Democrats get people like these? I mean, they cannot be serious that this is what is going to win the presidency, Bill.
They are serious. Cory Booker is a betrayer. He started off very, very well. He had many fans in politics, many white fans. He did things that were unique. I believe he was a Rhodes Scholar, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that it may not be true. I know he studied at Oxford, and he actually became the head of a Jewish organization at Oxford, even though he wasn't Jewish. And people say, oh, my God, what a wonderful man, how interesting he is. But now when you look back on his career, everything he did was calculated to advance Cory Booker, and only Cory Booker. He became mayor of Newark. He made absolutely no impact at all. As a senator, he's made no impact at all. He, as I said, he was head of a Jewish organization at Oxford and was always pro-Israel until it came time to vote on the Iran nuclear deal. And he just stabbed Israel right in the back, and it was appalling. He was guided through his early career by a rather well-known rabbi, even though, again, he wasn't Jewish, and yet in his book about his life, he left him completely out of it. Just whatever is right at the moment for Cory is what he does. And apparently, I mean, I would believe that he made these bizarre comments simply to ingratiate himself with the gay lobby. That's not a negative comment on the gay lobby, but it's a negative comment on Cory Booker. I mean, first of all, I think the chairman of the committee should have called him out of order. I mean, those questions were ridiculous about gay sex. What does that have to do with the Secretary of State? Really, I mean, it's just embarrassing. I think Pompeo handled himself well. Well, I'm sorry to say I think it's possible Pompeo may not be confirmed. My gut is that he will be by one or two votes, but there are a couple of real bad eggs on the Republican side, like Rand Paul, who are going to vote against him on the grounds that, he doesn't represent my kind of foreign policy. For God's sakes, this is about as good a man as it gets. He graduated first in his class at West Point. He's been an outstanding member of Congress, an expert on national security, The only way he's going to get confirmed because of a couple of Republican defections will be if a few Democrats vote for him. Now, there are some Democrats up for re-election who are from moderate states, and they're going to have a hard time voting against him. But if they do vote against him, if I were the Republican National Committee, I would make that a major issue in the campaign. Who does this senator really represent? Does this senator represent our state, or does he or she represent Nancy Pelosi? And I think it could be, and I think they know that could be very effective. If he gets through, it'll be by a couple of votes, probably supplied by a couple of moderate Democrats like Joe Manchin.
I don't know if you, I agree with you, but I don't know if you saw the information out of West Virginia that Joe Manchin is in bigger trouble than I ever thought he was.
Yes.
Apparently, his polling data in West Virginia. Now, of course, it depends on who the Republican is. The Republicans have not nominated,
and that's a big problem in West Virginia because they have a kook running.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, we all remember Ray Moore down in Alabama, but still, it looks like he's going to have a tough time. But I look at this man and I say this is a serious guy, but more important than that, the country needs a Secretary of State. Now, if you want to turn every confirmation into a battle of the last election. We cannot govern ourselves. I mean, it's just going to be, well, I didn't vote for you, therefore, I didn't vote for this president, therefore, I'm going to vote against every confirmation that he makes. Well, that's not the way the system, that's not why they go to the Senate for confirmation. They go there for advice and counsel, or whatever the word is, but they don't go there to re-litigate the last election bill. That's not what its purpose is.
That's right. And the people in these moderate states are going to be pretty furious if they find out that a man like Mike Pompeo was rejected by their senator. I mean, if you take a senator like Claire McCaskill from Missouri, which voted heavily for Trump, what excuse is she going to give, you know, if she votes against him? I think he may get by with a couple of votes. So.
Well, I hope so, because I think he's a good man. Now, another story from the week time is flying, and I don't want to miss this one, is Speaker Paul Ryan deciding to get out of politics altogether at the end of this term. I don't know if he should be replaced as Speaker. Maybe he should as soon as possible. But I tend to believe Ryan, and I tend to believe that he's exhausted with Washington. Washington has become, or the House in particular, has become so poisonous that look, Trey Gowdy is also getting out. I think a lot of good people may just start getting out of politics and saying, you know, I got better things to do with my life. I'll go back to the state. I'll do politics in my state and forget the House. I mean, it's really a poisonous place, Bill.
It is, and it's very, very exhausting. Now, to be sure, in a way, it's always been that way. I mean, it is nothing new to find politics in Washington.
Yes.
You know, I remember back in the 1960s when things got very bitter over Vietnam, that people were saying the same thing, that it was just becoming an impossible situation. But there has to be greater congeniality, especially in the Senate. The Senate was always a somewhat congenial body, not entirely, but they tried to make it a true discussion chamber. And senators treated each other with courtesy. That is kind of gone, and I hate to see it gone because you're getting crazy things done. And by the way, I think it's on both sides. I don't think it's on only one side. I think Democrats can make a legitimate argument that Merrick Garland, when he was nominated for the Supreme Court, should have been brought to a vote and confirmed. And even though I don't like Merrill Garland's politics necessarily, he is a very fine man. And he would have made, at the very minimum, a distinguished judge, not necessarily always deciding my way. But the Democrats made a valid point on that. It was stalled and stalled and stalled. Now the Democrats are doing the same thing. I mean, the nominee for Secretary of State is an outstanding man. I mean, this is a country that confirmed John Kerry as Secretary of
State.
That's right. I mean, a buffoon who made a fool of himself. And did not really do a very good job at all. He may have worked hard, but he didn't do a very good job. And you had people who have been confirmed who probably shouldn't have been confirmed. But Pompeo is kind of an easy choice. Even the Washington Post, by the way, in its editorial, very liberal paper, said confirm Pompeo. And I think that if they don't confirm Pompeo, the Republicans, if they have any energy and any imagination, and there's doubt on both of those scores, should make it into a major campaign issue in moderate states and really go after
people. Well, I hope so. I agree. I hope so, because I think it's a shame. I come from the school where the president should get his people. And if you don't like the president, vote against him. But he should get his people. I mean, it's like...
There is really something very serious.
Right, an ethical problem or something very serious. But 99% of the time, these things ought to be done fairly quickly, and because it makes no sense. It's like telling a manager that he cannot pick a third base coach. Well, no, he gets to pick the third base coach. If you don't like the manager, fire the manager, or vote for the next president. Bill, as we look at next week, we've got a few minutes, and I wanted to see what you're looking forward next week. I have a feeling that Comey is going to be quite a bit in the news next week.
Well, he will be, although I don't think they will be closely read stories. I think the book has pretty much already been exposed to the public through excerpts, and I don't think there are any bombshells there that people have to worry about. I mean, is he about to come out with some great announcement? I don't think so. I really don't. It's a vindictive book. I can understand a man being fired and having his career ruined, writing a vindictive book. It's not a wise thing to do, but I can understand it being done. And we'll just have to see what comes of this. I don't think anything's going to come of it. I think the investigations will go on. Obviously, Mueller is determined to get something, and he might get something. You know, it is possible that Trump could be driven from office. a lot will depend on the results of this election. If it's a wave election and the Democrats really take over, they, you know, in the House, all they need is a majority vote to impeach him. I think that's almost a certainty, that no matter what he has or hasn't done, the Congressional Black Caucus will demand that the Democratic Party impeach him if it has a majority. And I think that impeachment vote will go against Trump. And it is possible, very strongly possible, he could be impeached. In the Senate, the whole issue, if that ever happens, will depend on how many reliable Republican votes there are for Trump. Remember, one of the reasons Nixon had to leave office was that the senators of his own party could not guarantee that they would vote for him. I mean, he was not particularly well liked in the Republican Party, and people forget the fact that Watergate came along in his second term, and it didn't come to fruition as an issue until the second half of his second term, until 1974, mm-hmm. Well, almost the second half. He was almost a lame duck by then. Nobody owed him anything. And it was made very plain to him that they could not guarantee you he would survive a Senate vote. Now, that could happen again, but it would require that the Democrats, who now have, 49 votes, 48 votes in the Senate, it would require them mm-hmm. to get up to near 60, because it takes 67 to remove a president. So they would have to get way up there and have a solid vote and then pick off six or seven Republican senators, and that could be possible. But I don't think they'll get anywhere near that in the election.
No, I don't think so either, and the election is... There's predictions both ways, and I still think it's a little bit early because we still don't even know the candidates in many states, particularly the challengers.
Right.
So it's we're probably several months away from that. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you. I think we already have enough for next week.
We do. So, yes, we do. Each week we have more for the next week. It's like rollover time on your cell phone plan.
That's right. It just seems like it never stops. I wonder who's going to have a book next Sunday. Maybe somebody's got another book coming out next week. Who knows? Maybe Stormy Daniels has a book. That's it.
Oh, I'm sure she'll have more than a book.
Apparently,
oh, God.
She hasn't written one yet, so I'm sure she's due for a book. Well, thank you for your time, and have a wonderful evening, and thank you for the great work with Urgent Agenda.
Thank you, Silvio. Looking forward to next week.
All right, looking forward to next week as well. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Another week with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We looked at a lot of stories today. There's a lot of stuff in the news that, just an unbelievable amount of news. It just seems like every Sunday when we do these things, it's just, I have a whole page full of things here. Each one of these topics could be a show by itself. That's how amazing this whole thing is. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.